I'm Liz Webster, and I'm the founder of Save British Farming, which we started initially as actually Farmers for a People's Vote because of the fear of no-deal Brexit on farming. And I partnered up with the former economist of the NFU, Sean Rickard, and we launched a report in 2019 about what no-deal Brexit would do to farming. And then after Brexit happened, or, you know, after the election happened with Boris Johnson, we formed Save British Farming, really to try and lobby against the America trade deal, which we were successful with because it didn't happen then. And, you know, just to try and really lobby to go back in or get to as close to the single market as possible to get rid of the trade barriers, which are so damaging to British agriculture.
You mentioning Brexit, I mean, lots of pressure was coming from the right, wasn't it, to vote for Brexit. The idea here being that it's much better to set our own trade policies, fishing policies, that sort of thing, rather than being told what to do by Brussels. Also, a lot of people were observing the way that British industry had so rapidly declined after joining the EEC in the 1970s and thinking, well, maybe we could go it alone again. But this hasn't worked out very well for farmers, and because it seems to me, I mean, you can probably tell me more, that much of the farming subsidy was coming from Brussels.
Yeah, I mean, look, the farming vote was actually split. The NFU were clear. They said we're better off to remain in the European Union. But there was a push largely from the Conservative Party of fantasy politics that you will be better off. But look, 90% of our exports go to the European Union. And as you're a small country on your own, how are you going to be able to ever negotiate with giants like USA and big agricultural producers like New Zealand and Australia and Brazil? So we were always of the view that it would be problematic, and that it was a fantasy, and, you know, we were right. So, and as I said, Sean Rickard used to be the chief economist with the NFU, but some people politically believed the fantasy of having a Brexit that took us back in time to when we had an empire. Largely that's what happened. But some people now, most farmers admit that Brexit has been a disaster for farming, but those that don't are either on side with the Farmageddon and the mass intensification, or they think somehow we're going to be able to get a best Brexit, but they're not really understanding how the world works.
But wasn't there a promise that the farming subsidies would continue after Brexit?
Well, there's all sorts of promises all of the time by these politicians. But, you know, we knew, and, you know, we knew that the pressures, once you blow a hole in your economy, then the pressures to fund, you know, hospitals, schools and everything are going to take priority over agriculture. And so then you've got the pressure to intensify and go down that, you know, that route.
It's not just Brexit, I'm sure, because I know over the years farmers have been campaigning to get a fair deal from supermarkets, which seem to be operating, particularly since the hostile takeover of Morrisons, who did deal a bit directly with farmers. There's this kind of oligopoly going on here. And
completely.
People I was chatting to at the farming demo in Westminster back in November were saying they're price takers. They have absolutely no muscle in this market. They have to take it or leave it, whatever the supermarkets tell them. And that's not just Brexit. That's been going on for probably decades.
Yeah, but they don't understand. They don't connect the dots. You know, the reason that's been happening is nothing to do with the European Union. It actually started in 1964 with Alec Douglas Home when he repealed the Resale Price Maintenance Act. And that's the year that Tesco started to expand. So, you know, and you put together some of the changes made by Margaret Thatcher with the Milk Marketing Board. All of those things have meant the supermarkets give money to political parties, yeah? And ultimately, they've been scapegoating the blame onto the European Union, and some people fell for it. That you know, it's as simple as that. But really, what they want, the right wing want more of this capitalism and more of the driving down of prices and amalgamation of big corporations. And the people that voted for Brexit really wanted to go back to what we had in the 1960s, which was more local high streets and, you know, less monopolization. But we're getting the opposite. As we know with immigration, exactly the same thing has happened. So they used the grievances to deliver what is a very unpalatable picture.
Now, I'm old enough. It's nice to hear you mentioning the Milk Marketing Board, where we used to have these vending machines in the streets. Not many of them around, but certainly where I grew up in southeast London, there were a few. You put your sixpence in and you get a little tub of milk out. The Milk Marketing Board seems to me to be, you know, quite important in order to make sure that farmers are getting fair prices for the, you know, that they're not victims of the market. So we've got a stable farming industry. But it wasn't just milk, was it? I think it was before the Second World War, these marketing boards were created by the government to make sure that the farmers were not victims of the vagaries of the free market.
Yes, but, you know, they've done, as I said, they've done a sterling job. And because we've got a duopoly as such, two parties, it's easy for donors to just swing from one party to the next and get what they want. And politicians say things to placate people and play the scapegoat game. And here we are where we are. But it's certain that more farmers are waking up to the fact that we are just a football to be used. And, you know, we've been badly punctured to the point where we're not really going to exist much anymore.
Well, what about the left? Because you would hope that although they tend to be the Labour Party, particularly, and other parts of the left tend to be based in the cities and the towns, not really au fait with the countryside. You would think that there would be some kind of understanding from the left that you've got quite a lot of farm workers out there who may be out of a job and taken over. In a way, it's a kind of form of mega privatisation where you've got big companies either buying up farmland for maybe a solar farm, which is not going to be employing people, or a carbon offset scheme, planting trees, which it will employ a few people to begin with, but those trees will just be sitting there. So taking land out of farming and corporatizing it, surely the left is very supportive of the family farmers.
Well, we're meant to have the left in power at the moment, but I'm not seeing much sign of that. You know, Keir Starmer's been cozying up to BlackRock. So unless the left, there are many left MPs in the Labour Party, as to whether at this early stage in the parliament they find the power to misbehave, I don't know. But here, you know, all of this has been put into the first budget. You know as well as I know, if they misbehave at this budget, they're back in an election if their budget fails. So they're not going to vote against their own interests. And I suppose we'll have to see what the early wranglings do. I suspect that we will get some sort of fudge, a bit like has happened with the pasty tax under Cameron and the fuel business that went on with Tony Blair. I suspect there's going to be a halfway house here. I hope, because if it doesn't, we're going to be really escalating. The protests are going to get much, much, you know, much more active. And you're going to be seeing food being held back and those sorts of things. Because, you know, this is robbery, really, what's going on. You don't just lie down and say, come in and take our farms. These have been in families for generations. And people have been working jolly hard, investing in that nest egg or that family heirloom that's passed down and never crystallised. And now, you know, they want to throw these people off the land, make them homeless and jobless all at the same time. And, you know, it's absolutely appalling. Plus, for the consumer, it means that your food is going to come from mass-produced factories or from the other side of the world, probably using slave labour, terrible animal welfare, and God knows what chemicals are put in it. It's a complete loss of control.
Well, look, I mean, if I was a lefty here in Bristol, you know, I'd be thinking about farmers as wealthy people. These tractors, they're £100,000 to buy one of these things.
Well, they are, but, you know, we've gone, farming has gone the way it's gone. We're not if we had to still farm with a horse and a plough, we'd then be needing armies of people out there, and that would be costing a fortune. So in many ways, the Industrial Revolution shows you how we ended up where we are. But a lot of these farms have to borrow money to buy these tractors. You can't work efficiently without having this machinery. So, you know, that's where we are. If you've got a vintage tractor, it's not going to be able to do the work that we need to do at the prices that we're given on the farm gate and what people have got used to spending. Going back to the 1980s, people were spending about 30% of their income on food. Now it's about 9%.
What about the use of farmland for tax relief? Because the government's change in putting inheritance tax on to farmers doesn't really seem to address that one.
Well, so people buying farmland as a tax dodge, you mean?
Well, that's right. So a lot of people, to avoid paying inheritance tax or capital gains tax, they're buying farmland in the knowledge that it's not going, that they say it is, like you say, a tax dodge.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I think when people refer to Clarkson and Dyson as a tax dodge. Now, if I look at Clarkson, he is producing food. He's made a lot of money out of his farm through Amazon. I think his farm shop's also linked to Amazon. You can buy, I think they've done a partnership so their goods can be bought via Amazon. So he's made a business out of that farm, which is at least producing food. So I can't criticize him for that. And I don't think it's I think inheritance tax is a particularly awful tax, actually, quite frankly. And the easiest thing would be to get rid of it, because only about 4% of the country pay it. And most of those people tend to be, middle income rather than the very, very wealthy who can afford to move their money around to escape it. But the farmland thing is, I think it's the investments are there for the land. And the thing that's encouraging that is the rollover. So that if you sell your, if you buy a parcel of land and then you do an option agreement with a building company and they build those houses and then you make millions of pounds, then you can roll over that money by buying more land, and you hope that that can be turned into a solar farm or you do trees or whatever. There is very little money in farming and producing food, as we've discussed. So it's really speculating in buying land, hoping that it can be used for something else. But at some point, especially with the way geopolitics are going, I mean, Russia today, there's been an announcement about the problems with food in Russia alone. China has been stockpiling food since 2010. India has been protecting wheat exports for 2 years. At some point, we're going to have a food crisis, because where is the food going to come from? You know, we might be able to really ramp up production with factories for livestock, but we haven't been putting money into greenhouse growing. In fact, they've been collapsing because the government haven't given subsidies to lettuce and tomato growers here. And we've still got awful trade barriers with Europe for imports, which are cataclysmic and not really working properly. So to me, none of it makes any sense, particularly if you want to make sure that you've got a stable country. And the other thing the Conservatives did since Brexit is they removed food as a public good. And I think that's so alarming. And they put the environment as the public good. So they put, you know, the sort of the dreamland of you know, wind in the willows above people's nutrition. And the other problem with that is that the wind in the willows wildlife rely on us to grow food as well. It's not in a book. The food that we produce feeds wildlife, pets and humans. And there seems to be a total disconnect between what I see as reality on the ground, proper substance stuff, and ideology, and that's why I'm seriously worried. And everything that I've been worried about from before Brexit happened keeps actually coming towards in front of me like a giant snowball. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, I wasn't a scaremonger. This really is upon us. And I can only see trouble and strife ahead. Or, you know, if Donald Trump's feeling benevolent, he might sort of send us food parcels from aeroplanes. I'm not sure.
Well, don't hold your breath on that one. What you're saying reminds me of Robin Page and his charity, the Countryside Restoration Trust, because they were very active over the last, 15 years or so. And actually, farmers were bequeathing their farms to his trust. Unfortunately, he was the victim of a hostile takeover 3 years ago or so, and has died since. But Robin's charity was holding a candle, really, to this idea of wildlife and environment and farming together. You know, obviously, very limited use of things like pesticides, which are bad for the wildlife. But being quite careful as farmers to And as many farmers have been doing for many generations, to actually respect and look after the wildlife that's on the land too.
To a large extent, what's gone on since the war, the grants and subsidies came in, is that farmers end up doing what government tells it to do. So when people blame farmers for everything, it's actually government decisions, it's policy that drives that happening. And the emphasis on the environment is very still for farmers is very, very strong. It's not the same for the water companies, because they can do what the hell they like and they don't seem to have any redress. But the whole emphasis of pushing things only on the environment, rather than really sort of saying, well, we've got to have a good balance of food and the environment, makes no sense. And I just see it as being a policy which means you're going to end up importing all of your food. But as I said, no one's really answered where that comes from. Europe is cutting down production and increasing imports as well. They've just signed the Mercosur deal. Because we've got those trade barriers there, Europe is not really incentivized to send much over here, apart from the big, big producers who are managing to get round the red tape somewhat. But they're coming back with empty lorries. So it's financially not great. So if I was prime minister, I would be pushing to get back into the single market as quickly as possible. But that doesn't seem to be happening either. The left seem to be split, and I think we're going to see a Jeremy Corbyn type party rise up quite soon. And they were at our demo last week, actually. They're coming under a hashtag called Together, I think. I don't know. Reform want to come behind the farmers and speak for the farmers, but they want the American trade deal. And the American trade deal is unsurvivable for British agriculture. America is a massive producer. They're subsidised hugely, and they've got a very aggressive export capability. So as well as that, you know, every year with the Australia deal and the New Zealand deal, those quotas are ramping up every year. So our livestock are going to have a very difficult time competing against meat, which is hormone-fed, feedlot, fed with grain. They finish those animals a lot quicker than we do.
Can you say something about these environmental incentives on farmers now? I did speak to a National Trust tenant farmer who just literally put all of his stuff into a large lorry and left because he was being told he had to take land out of production, and this was going to make the farm barely viable. So what is this government incentive to so-called look after the environment for farmers?
Well, we're in flux. You know, they've pulled the grants, or they've closed off the grants for the ALMS scheme. And I mean, that's the other thing that we're all, it's not just about the inheritance tax. They've also fast tracked the removal of BPS. So everyone was budgeting for a lot more money next year, and Rachel Rees has clawed it back. So for bigger farms, they would be expecting 30 odd thousand, and they're probably going to get about 8. So, you know, gives you some idea.
What does BPS stand for?
That's a basic payment system that we had under the EU, which they promised to continue with that, but tailor it down. And this is for English farmers, because since Brexit, all four countries within the UK are actually competing with each other because their own parliaments can decide their own budgets for agriculture now, whereas before it all came down from Europe. So they promised this system of pulling down the BPS system, so you've got less every year to 2027. But we've always had this problem in that we're looking at what ELMS is, and it's never really been finished before they started to pull that rug from under our feet. Stop it. And so it's a really uncertain time for farmers, and it's just survival of the fittest. You've just got to do and find a way of surviving. So some people did go into these schemes, but I was always suspicious of them because they're only for 3 years rather than 5 years. The countryside stewardship schemes that came in before Brexit were 5-year schemes. Why would a government only make it a 3-year scheme, which I was always very suspicious of and felt it was probably something that they'd use as a carrot to get people out of food production, then make out and make it sound nice that we're doing stuff for the environment, and then yank that rug from under your feet and hey presto, they're not subsidising anything and we're back to what we were in the Victorian times.
You mentioned briefly, you know, other countries and what's going on there. I don't think it's fair to just look at Britain in isolation, because there seems to be, I can remember over the last few years seeing some massive farming protests in India, for example. And I know there's been food shortages in Sri Lanka. So can you say what we've got maybe to learn from what's been going on abroad?
Yeah, I mean, I've done a bit of work with the Punjabi farmers, actually, when they were protesting. And it's the same thing in many ways. It's a corporatisation of the land. But they're in a different stage to us in that a lot of their farms are tiny, you know, just a few acres. And so they're at the stage probably that we were at in this, you know, in the sort of 1700s. But they fought a very, very long and hard game. And Modi eventually gave some concessions, but their fight is not over. Sri Lanka had a corrupt government that basically got them to do crazy agricultural policy. I mean, never in Sri Lanka's history have they had food shortages until they made the decision to go organic overnight. If you don't use chemical fertilizers and go organic, your yield's less than half. And so they had a food crisis, which then culminated in the government being chased out of town. And then they had to have a bailout from the IMF. And then, you know, they've got a free port built and the Chinese are in there and everything's changing. So that is seen as progressive by people on the right. I see it as a complete loss of control, because if all of your food is controlled by corporations, then you've got no influence on it as a democracy at all. And it's just you have to, we have the same with our telephones, don't we, which is slightly different, but you can't really influence anything, but you are what you eat. And if you're then being force fed this food and you've got no way of escaping it, and then you also, if two countries fall out and you're heavily reliant on a world system, then where does that lead you as well? So to me, I don't think it makes any sense to go so big in terms of governance that eventually I think it'll fall apart, particularly around food. I think you have to be geographic and have some localism around it, which is why the European system wasn't perfect, but it was a good mixture of democratic input, legislature, which meant that could amend things and with vetoes, and identity. So I don't know. I mean, the biggest system we have is the American system, and we see how bad that food system is. You know, the Americans I speak to nearly cry at the loss of European food. It's becoming more like America. It's not what anybody wants, apart from the big corporates.
Now let's just take a little trip to the moon, stand on the moon and look down on planet Earth and Britain, particularly Britain's farmland, because this is a serious business. Civilization, alleged civilization anyway, began thousands of years ago, when the hunter-gatherers started to settle, started to do a bit of farming, and the surpluses they produced enabled other parts of society to do other things. Up until then, it had been really, you know, a scrabble for survival. And it's a serious business, farming. If you think about Ireland in the 1800s, you think about China much more recently, you think about Ukraine also in the 20th century. If you end up with a famine, millions can die, Liz.
Yeah, I know. I've been saying this for quite a few years and lots of people thought I was mad, but that's what I see. And that's what I've always seen, because I don't see a serious approach to food. I mean, the last time we had anyone serious in office was Lord Plum, probably. So that takes you back a few years. And I think it just is all about listening to big business. And we haven't paid our politicians enough money, which means they're up for sale. We haven't had a good political system. And so they're making decisions for big corporates, which are pulling them all in different directions, and none of it adds up. And that's why we are where we are, I think, in a very, very dangerous place.
Let's roll on 5-10 years. Where do you think British farming will be if nothing changes, and if this inheritance tax and the other changes, the environmental changes, the drop in subsidy, where will we be?
If they don't U-turn on the inheritance tax this spring, the protests will really go up a gear quite considerably, because I don't think you can. I think enough farmers are awake to this being daylight robbery, and we have got the sort of machinery that really can interrupt society. But in doing so, it plays into the hands of the right wing. And if Corbyn does come up with a party, then it also plays into the hands of the far left wing. And we've got a first past the post system. So I don't know where that will leave electorally, and if the government is chased out of town, or if they manage to hang on until 2029. I would feel much more comfortable if we had a proportional representation system, which would mean that there would have to be more power sharing rather than a government winning a lot of seats on 34% of the vote, which is where we're at right now. So I hope that somebody in the Labour Party sees this, because I see that Nigel Farage, as much as I enjoy talking to him, I don't know that, you know, he's very good at capitalising on grievances, but he is the man that works for big business, Musk and others, who I don't think are hinged in reality. And so I don't know, you know, I think it's quite scary, because all of the planets are lining up to not be in the right place. We might be at some form of collapse. They've brought through a budget which really is going to lead to a recession and potentially a depression. And we could be in the zone of repeating what Germany did in the 1930s, except, you know, we haven't got the money to, you know, put a lot behind our armed forces at the moment, unless they manage to find a magic money tree from somewhere. I don't know. So, I think I can't find answers to it, I'm afraid. I keep going round in circles, and it's kind of what drives me to try and interact, campaign, and say, come on, there must be somebody there in Westminster who's listening and can say, you know, okay, this is enough. We need to do something serious, because ultimately we've never had a revolution in this country. We had a civil war, but we've never had societal breakdown in recent modern times. So I'm very scared by that. And food is at the absolute heart of that, as you well know, I'm sure. Food is at the base of all of our economies.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of talk about action. Do you think the farmers have really got the stomach for the sort of stuff the French do and the Dutch have been up to?
I don't think that the British public respond well to what the French do, and there isn't the partnership between the farmers and the voters. We've got a disconnect. But I think if we use our heads, which is what I'm trying to do, and campaign effectively, as I've said, and ramp up what we're doing, But I think if there isn't, we've got a humanitarian crisis with this initially. If they don't U-turn on this policy, we are going to have thousands of farmers committing suicide before the deadline. And that is, for me, a massive sense of responsibility for our elders. So that is what pushes me forward for that. And I hope that they do something on the inheritance tax before that. If they don't, and that is what really is driving a lot of farmers now, many of them have got elder relatives or they know people that have. And we, as a community, we can't stand back and allow this to happen. So if there isn't movement by the government by the spring, there we will do food strikes. And that is the low time of our food stocks as we go into spring, early summer, and it will hurt. And we've got the machinery to really interrupt imports as well. And that's what we'll do.
Wow. Well, for those who are interested in this topic, I'd also maybe like to follow and support the farmers. Whereabouts can people go on social media, et cetera, Liz?
So we've got a Facebook page, Save British Farming, Instagram, and we're on Twitter. And also I've got a YouTube channel, Liz Webster, hashtag Save British Farming. I haven't done much on there recently because I've been too busy being planning tractor rallies and activities. But I'm going to try and get some more videos up in the next few days.
I know one of the things that's emerged from all of this over the last year or so is quite a lot of farmers are doing their own kind of video blogs on YouTube, etc. Are there any of those you'd like to recommend?
Yeah, there's one really good one called Farming Explained, which is by a young lad called Ollie, who's actually a history graduate. And he's really putting it all together in a really good way. And he's got a small farm up in Leicestershire, and he makes the connection. He's actually a Labour member as well, which is, I think, is interesting for people in that he can put together those historical facts together with what's going on now. And we're good friends. We speak to each other a lot to try and calm our nerves. It's really good for people to try and find the truth, I guess. So that's what I would say. 'Cause at the moment, we've got the Conservatives wanting to back the farmers, and we're scratching our heads saying, but you guys are the ones who signed us up to these bad trade deals and CPTPP. So it is good to sort of join the dots and go, well, what is going on? And so we are not politically affiliated with anybody, and we are just looking at this from the grassroots upwards for food, farming, countryside. And food and farming is absolutely connected to public health and the national health system and the welfare state. All of this happened and was built after the war. And Ollie brilliantly explains that on his channel.
I suppose the other thing is just go to your local farm shop. If you've got any small holders or market gardens anywhere near you, that's the place to support rather than Tesco's and Sainsbury's.
Yeah, you know, and if you do go into Waitrose or you know, whatever, just look at the labelling, check that it might have a British flag on it, but check where it came from, because it sometimes it says British, but actually it might be coming from South Africa or something. So you can decide what you're buying in the supermarket. It just takes a bit of time and buy what is British on those shelves.
Okay, Liz Webster from Save British Farming, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for asking me.